From the KTOA newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Alaska's schools, universities, healthcare programs, and the ferry system all would see big spending cuts under a new budget proposed this morning by Republican Governor Michael Dunleavy. The spending plan would overhaul major government functions and eliminate specific programs and services. Dunleavy says the cuts are needed to balance the state budget while paying out larger permanent fund dividend checks under a historical legal formula.
I'm going to be bold here for a moment. I think everybody in this room knows we have to get our fiscal house in order. And I think everybody in this room and in the state realizes that there's going to be sacrifices across the board, that this has gone on too long, and that it's got to stop.
The proposals were released this morning. As of noon, state lawmakers and budget experts were still examining the details. One of the big cuts is 25% to Alaska's per-student school spending, a reduction of $280 million. The proposal would also cut state unrestricted general fund spending on its university system by 44%. Dunleavy also wants major reductions in spending on Medicaid, the state federal health care program for low-income Alaskans, and he's proposing big cuts to state ferries and the potential to privatize parts of it. One way Dunleavy would raise more money for the state includes taking it from municipalities. He's proposing to eliminate municipalities' ability to levy property taxes on oil and gas infrastructure. That tax revenue would flow to the state instead. Dunleavy's budget proposal is only the first in a long legislative process. The plan now goes before the House and Senate, which have the power to add money back. On any given day, pilots in the U.S. Air Force might be flying in the airspace above the environment, any environment on Earth, desert, open ocean, the tropics, or the Arctic. So they have to be prepared to survive in any one of those places in case they get stuck there for some reason. And in the Arctic especially, that requires some unique training. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig got a glimpse of some of that training in Utqiagvik and has this story.
A handful of men stand around a domed igloo, watching an instructor add the last squeaky snow bricks to the structure.
How that stays there is beyond logic. It's like styrofoam.
One more.
These guys have been out here the past 2 days and nights in temperatures that have dipped to 15 below and winds up to 30-plus miles an hour. They're learning how to build shelters, flag down help, and just generally survive in an incredibly forbidding environment.
So everything happens out here. You are just living in the snow.
They don't go back inside after they come out here and begin the training.
That's Sergeant Garrett Wright, who's an instructor for this course and works out of Eielson Air Force Base, close to Fairbanks.
We have aircrew flying throughout the region, all over Alaska, above the tree line, in the woods line, over the ocean, over the ice.
And if anything goes wrong, they need to be prepared to hunker down and survive until help can get to them. There are 6 students at this training. Even though the course is typically geared at the Air Force, most of today's trainees are Army survival instructors from the Fairbanks area. Of everything the guys get trained on out here, the igloo building is probably the most sophisticated. They also learn basic things like how to recognize and prevent frostbite and how to think through the logistical challenges of the Arctic that complicate normally simple tasks. For example, pulling down a plastic tab on a flare.
And what do you think you have to be careful of, though, if there's a plastic tab that you're going to be utilizing?
Brittle.
Super brittle in the cold temperatures.
Sergeant Jess Evans is the lead instructor for this course. He's been a survival specialist with the Air Force for about 14 years.
I fell in love with the cold environment. I fell in love with Alaska as a whole.
He teaches cold environment survival in the Fairbanks area and periodically barren lands courses like this one. Basically anywhere above the tree line where you don't have access to fire building. And while Evan sees living outside in these conditions as a serious challenge, he also thinks it can be kind of fun. He loves working with snow, for example.
Seems funny, but if your imagination can picture it in your head, I mean, you can figure out how you can shape the different angles and everything else, so you can build pretty much anything out here.
He tells me that with a different group a few weeks ago, they actually used building snow sculptures as a way to deal with the psychological stress of a potential crash and the boredom of waiting a long time for help.
They got pretty elaborate with the polar bears, penguins, you name it.
After the course in Utqiagvik, trainees will hopefully know how to stay alive in one of the harshest environments in the world, and maybe also build a polar bear out of snow. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik.
The Dunleavy administration proposes cutting 3/4 on the state's ferry system and exploring privatization. Such deep cuts could potentially cripple the service before the end of the year. As Coastal Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, Pacific leaders in Southeast have long been urging ferry reform, but are skeptical of the governor's approach.
Twice a year, Southeast Conference brings together civic and business leaders from the region. It's usually a chance for the ferry system's chief to check in with leaders from smaller communities. At Wednesday's meeting, a resident of Cake stands up. He's upset about cost overruns of the Alaska-class ferries and the ferry's inability to serve smaller docks without even more costly retrofits.
And you had all your people down at Ketchikan, yet they couldn't figure out there that they were building something wrong there, right there at the yard. I mean, it seemed like somebody should have been paying attention.
Speaking is Delbert Kadake, head of Cake's Tribal Fuel Company. He's addressing Shirley Marquardt, the Alaska Marine Highway System's executive director. As he finishes upbraiding ferry management, his tone lightens.
I appreciate what you're doing there, Shirley. I'm not trying to get mad or anything. I just want to speak up for our community because we do need help in our little communities. Sir.
Such is the love-hate relationship in coastal communities with state ferries. Cost-cutting has meant less service, more breakdowns and delays, which in turn hurts ridership and revenues. Low ridership is one of the justifications made by Governor Mike Dunleavy's budget czar for even steeper cuts. Budget Director Donna Ardoin told Capitol reporters in Juneau that state-subsidized ferries aren't cost-effective.
For example, the cost to transport a vehicle on a state highway is about 2 cents per mile, where it's about $4.58 per mile on a ferry.
That comparison doesn't square. All but five of the 33 Alaska communities served by the ferry are off the road system. For them, it is the highway. It's how people bring vehicles in, seafood is exported, sports teams travel. Gary White heads Sitka's Economic Development Association. His city's on Baranoff Island. He says the ferry's a lifeline.
This is going to have a far-reaching impact for not only business, for the cultural, for the social impacts, and for the economic benefits of all our communities.
The governor's long-term plan goes further. Ardoin told reporters the governor penned an order to study divesting from the ferry system entirely.
We have proposals to look at privatization, for example, in the marine highway system. We're in the process of bringing on a marine consultant to talk about all of the options that are available. That may be one of them.
But civic leaders in Southeast are skeptical that could work.
There's not one public ferry system in the world that operates 100% off the fare box. It just doesn't exist. And, you know, you can have consultants study things and, you know, it doesn't necessarily you're going to get the answer you want.
That's David Kensinger, head of Petersburg's Chamber of Commerce. He's also part of the Ferry Reform Committee that studied ferry governance models around the world. Efforts to depoliticize ferry system management are not new.
This organization, all of us around the region, have tried for years to change how the ferry system operates. And every time you get a new governor, well, you get a new change.
The Reform Committee is championing legislation to turn the Marine Highway into a public corporation. That two-year effort wasn't mentioned by the governor's office, but Kensinger said they hope to work together.
He doesn't have to pay a new consultant. He can just take a look at it, and we're open to engage him in discussions on it.
More concerning to this group is further cost-cutting. The Dunleavy administration touts its cuts would save around $96 million, but how the ferry system would survive the year isn't clear. Alaska Marine Highway System officials referred all questions back to the governor's budget office. Ferry boosters in the House recently held a meeting touting the importance of the Alaska Marine Highway System. It'll be just one of many core services that Alaska lawmakers will tussle over in the coming weeks in the Capitol. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And finally, a giant figure in Alaska history has passed. Former state lawmaker Jack Coghill died this morning at the age of 93. His son, State Senator John Coghill, says his dad died peacefully at his home in North Pole after months of declining health.
This is not a big shocker, but it's, you're never ready for somebody to leave you.
Jack Coghill was born in Fairbanks in 1925 when Alaska was a territory. He served a tour of duty during World War II, then settled in Nenana to help his father run the Coghill General Store, which the family still operates. Coghill was elected to the Territorial House in 1952 and again in 1956 before being elected as a delegate to the Alaska Constitutional Convention. The 55 delegates wrote the Alaska Constitution during the 1956 convention held at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, and Coghill was the third delegate to sign the document. Cog Hill's passing leaves only one surviving delegate, former State Senator Vic Fisher, who also served in the territorial legislature. Cog Hill ran unopposed for a seat in the State House in 1960.